It's time again for the Scotty Johnny podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam, talking Wisconsin sports, NFL through D3, college hockey, doesn't matter. Two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what do you bet on Twitter, with music by Delete Great Cars and Trucks. Here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scotty Johnny podcast. I'm your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett. And with me, as per usual, is Cheddar Talk himself, Aaron Flottam.
Hey, John, what's going on, man? Hey, I'm going to apologize to you and anyone, all three of our listeners. Hi, Mom. The top of the ninth inning versus the Cubs is going on right now in the background, so I apologize.
Okay, very nice. Appreciate
that. Sorry, Brewers Cubs. Brewers are up 6-1. Spoiler alert.
Yes. Yeah, and if that goes final, you'll probably hear us at the time. I mean, not if it goes final, because it will obviously go final at some point. Just off air before we started, we were talking about Perdomo was just leaving the game, and Aaron said something about maybe he was looking for a nail file or something like that as he's coming out, and we said...
Yeah, the umpire approached Perdomo as he was coming out of the game, and it was a very ominous walk, like Tim Cheetah finding sandpaper on the Twins pitcher back in the 80s, you know, very, hey, why don't you come over here, son, talk to me? And it was just a friendly exchange. I thought for sure Perdomo was getting kicked for sandpaper in his back pocket or something like that.
Like we were saying, Aaron gave me a point. He's like, a lot of the younger pitchers, they like clean baseballs. And I said, not Trevor Bauer, though. He's not a new pitcher. But no. I love watching him get the MLB coming in and taking all of his baseballs and keeping them and saying, we're going to take these somewhere else and look at them without you.
Oh!
Because he's...
Rasmussen just buzzed Chris Bryant. Like, just missed his face by an inch.
Well, as long as he misses. We don't want him to actually hit people, but yeah.
In the face.
Yeah. Trevor Bauer is a guy who I always find is like... I'm not always sure how I feel about him. He seems like a terrible person, but when he has some takes on baseball, sometimes you're like, oh, that's actually really good, and nobody else will say that. But then again, he is a terrible person.
Yes.
So I kind of always loop back to that. Like, yeah, yes. No, he's right. He was good, and he's going to get paid, and I don't particularly care, and you know, do what you got to do for you, and then he'll say something about this and that. You know, like, oh, that's a good point. And then you'll remember, oh, yeah, he's a terrible person.
Yes.
So that's where we are on that. Aaron and I also having a fun non-Wisconsin sports take on this. We can loop it into Wisconsin a little bit.
Right.
Because today Julian Edelman announced his retirement. We got to put this in the opening because it has no business being in the main segment of the show.
Right.
Man, there are just way too many people on Twitter who think he should be in the Hall of Fame. It's crazy.
No, it's like anoint him and put him in, waive the 7-year rule. Let's do it right now. And his career numbers, you know, comparing him to another white wide receiver, you know, Jordy Nelson, five
Nowhere
times better.
Nelson.
And let's be perfectly clear. Jordy Nelson does not belong in the Hall of Fame.
No, didn't have enough monster years. He had a couple. He had to lose 1 year to the ACL tear.
Had a big Super Bowl game too.
Yeah,
honestly. That like he could have been him and if Rodgers wasn't so dominant, he was definitely MVP part two, and then Nick Collins, you know. So
yeah, and Jennings had a good game too. The problem was too many receivers had good games because Rodgers was hitting a lot of people, and his throws were ridiculous.
Rodgers was insane in that playoff year. Anyway,
the bigger thing on that too, though, is like Jordy had that. That was kind of his. Maybe people forget this, but that was really his coming out party in terms of his. His stature as a great wide receiver, because he was not very good that year. Like that season was not a particularly great season for him.
And if you want to put Edelman in the Hall of Fame because of a postseason and his postseason performance, now he has a much wider, has a bigger platform of games to choose from, a wider palette because he played in so many games with the Patriots. If you want to use the logic that they're really good in the postseason, then James Starks should be in the Hall of Fame because James Starks was unbelievable during that playoff run.
He holds a Super Bowl record. I mean, he should have been the MVP of that game because the only reason the Patriots were able to come back is they shifted their entire play to give the ball to James White in space.
Oh, you said James White. I said James Starks for the Packers.
Oh, James Starks. I'm sorry. I'm going James White because I'm thinking.
Yeah, well, same thing.
Same deal, both of them in terms of just having a playoff run. But James White's been more consistently a very good player in the playoffs.
Oh, absolutely.
And should have been an MVP of that playoff the year he set that record, because they're like, oh, Tom Brady set the most completions record. I'm like, only because James White set the most receptions record by a bunch. Like, come on.
What's going on here, John? I'm drinking Montana beer. We're talking about Patriots players.
Yeah. Well, and part of what we were saying is, like, if we just look at just playoffs, that's ridiculous, because he just happened to get on some of those teams. He was never a Pro Bowler. He was never all pro, obviously. And one thing I said, I was like, hey, anybody out there, though, who thinks that they're not going to put him into the Hall of Fame, I present to you John Lynch. Right. John Lynch has no business being in the Hall of Fame. He was the worst player on that defense. He's a guy you threw at. People are like, oh, but he made all pro. I was like, he was carried by a team of brilliance. Like, he had a great defense around him. One of the all-time great defenses, that Buccaneers defense.
Oh, absolutely.
And better than the one they have this year. I'll say it.
Yeah.
Just, it's better.
Who's the big linebacker on that Buccaneers defense?
Derek Brooks.
Derek Brooks, thank you.
That dude is a monster. Derek, tall.
You want to talk about Hall of Famer. Derek Brooks was a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, that guy was amazing. He was really, really good. Yeah.
Think about that. And I think he succeeded Hardy Nickerson at the middle linebacker spot in Tampa Bay, didn't he?
He may have. I'm trying to think if there's somebody in between there.
Might have been a gap, because Hardy Nickerson played his last year with the Packers. Remember that. Anyhow.
You got to put some of these guys in, because that was ridiculous. It's not it's not one of the ones you should have. He doesn't belong in. But I'll say this: they put in, like, hey, he's a media friendly, winner as MVP of a Super Bowl, likable, media liked white guy. Do you think there's no chance that the voters put him in?
Boston.
I have seen it.
Javi Baez just swung and missed that pitch that landed 6 feet short of home plate.
It's amazing. Javi Baez, the magician, swinging the pitches, making them disappear into the glove.
Yeah. Anyways.
All right, everybody. We've
this
had a good
Scotty Johnny podcast.
Yeah, I know. We want to thank everybody for joining us again this week, our listeners here and around the world. Thank you again for joining us. Wherever it is that you're listening to us, we love having you with us. And we want to remind you, of course, you can also follow the show on Twitter. This podcast here is on Twitter. The podcast itself is on Scotty Johnny Pod. You can follow me at Not So Humble Host. It's the thing I say to start the show. And Aaron, I know you're on Twitter. I follow you. My son follows you.
I don't know why you let him.
I
consciously clean up my language on Twitter now because of that.
I'm just trying to... introduce him to the ways of the world. Let him know what's out there waiting for him.
That he's going to run into.
Like, this is out there. People like Aaron are out there hanging out.
You can find me at Twitter Talk. Javi Baez just banged in.
Cheddar Talk.
What did I say?
You said Twitter Talk, which would be
I just watched Javi Baez hit a double down the left field line and knock two runs to the top of the ninth. Anyways, you can find me at Cheddar Talk, John. At Cheddar Talk.
All right. And we're going to get started.
Out of your mouth. Yes, let's do it, John.
We'll bring you some Brewers talk right away when we get started with our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
All right, Aaron, what we just saw here against the Cubs, it was 6-1, now it's 6-3. I'm sure we'll keep updating as we go through, obviously, but... This was a very good week.
They brought in Rasmussen, which they shouldn't have done, and now they have to bring in Hader because of it.
Yeah, you want to save Hader if you can. You don't want to have to pitch Hader or Williams or anything. You just want to be able to run out there with guys like Rasmussen and try to keep your bullpen from having to take on an extra pitcher right now. You don't want to do it. So
right, exactly. You're up 6-1, and you shouldn't have to. But, I mean, like,
and it's a non-safe situation.
Was standing at second. Which, I mean, he's not even – that means the winning run's not even at the plate with one out.
Yeah, it wasn't a safe situation.
It served – you know, we get mad at council about it, but it served him well over the years. He's like the Packers trading a player or letting a player go. Like, he's more – and it kind of made us mad last week with Woodruff and Corbin Burns pulling him a little bit early, but it served him well in his managerial time, pulling guys out early rather than late.
Yeah. And then that's fine. And usually the third time through the rotation stuff, that's something that's been borne out by the statistics. So they like to make sure they're good with that. But yeah, here's the, now it's a save situation. It's 6-3 with a runner on second and only one out. So we'll see how they get going here, but I'll say it. This was a very good week to be watching the Brewers. After last week, they'd lost 2 out of 3 to the Twins at home. And you were
The Twins were a very good team, by the way. Let's not undersell the Twins. Right. They're a good team.
That's what we were saying, too. We were like, you guys need to calm down. Everybody needs to calm down because this is a good team.
If the Twins had not lost 18 straight playoff games to this point over the last decade, I would say the Twins are World Series contenders, but they'll get swept in the first round. But in theory, they'd be World Series contenders. I would absolutely say that. They've got a powerful lineup, and they've got good pitching for the first time ever. So, and then that's why you shouldn't have put too much stock in that Twins series, and then the fact that they even got one out of it. But it's been a good week. After that first loss in St. Louis, it was lining up to look like it was going to be a bad series. And then 2 9-run games in a row. That was, and Travis Shaw with that bomb yesterday.
Yeah.
460 feet, I think it was, something like that. It was his third longest home run of his career. And Travis can bang him. He can.
Yeah. He's been great. He's been listed as day to day, but he's playing today, and he had a couple nice hits. Or he had at least one really good hit early on there to help drive some runs in. Mm-hmm. This basically after the Twins, they lost in Chicago and then won the next two. Lost in St. Louis and won the next two. Got above 500 here against the division too, and so they're with this game still being played right now. One game back of Cincinnati, and they'll catch up with Cincinnati, I think. The nice thing is putting away some other division talent early and looking fairly good doing so. The 5-3 loss to Chicago, I mean, that was a bad, was it fourth inning? They gave up 4 runs, and just like that, you're down huge. They came back, scored 3 a little later, and gave up one more, I believe, in the seventh inning. They had some chances. They had some chances in that one, and just didn't finish up with the hitting. And the feel of that, this entire early portion up through the second game against St. Louis was, man, I don't know if this team will ever hit.
Right.
And it was
which they were doing in the preseason, which everyone always says don't overplay the preseason. But at the same time, it was like they're hitting, like they really are, It's good to see the bats going. The bats were going again tonight, if only for one inning. But I mean, all you need is one good inning. So, how do you hit Hader?
And I don't know. But this is the thing that gets me is I think we were trying to get people to slow down last week because there was a lot of just weird Twitter angst, and that's of course what you get going to Twitter because it's just people screaming into a void trying to get attention. The amount of anger over Hira. Just like the problem is again, like it's early. These are the only stats you have. If he were batting, 270 and had 3 bad games, you'd be like, all right, he's in a spot. Now we'll see where he goes from here. But it was early. There was a point the other day he was still batting 80, not 80%. Yeah. He was batting 080.
Yeah,
and
120 below the Mendoza line. Yes.
Yeah, not where you want to be generally, but I mean he put up he had a good run today. He got his first home run of the season the other day. He now has 3 RBI. He's up to batting 107. All right, I mean like he's pulling up. He'll do better. He'll get better than what he is. And never forget he is. I mean people think that playing first is just nothingness, but I mean he's got to learn a new position while he goes too.
Right,
but he's doing all right. Yelich doesn't have any dingers or any particular. He's got like one double, but he's getting the bat on the ball. He's batting 330.
Hot Rummer said his back is bad too.
he's listed day to day. I don't think he'd play today, but yeah, he's also listed day to day. He's still batting .333.
Yeah.
And the Brewers just won with a strikeout from Hader. Just so the Brewers are up to 6-3.
I got a delay going on here. Got him with three straight sliders too. That was nice.
Beautiful. So 6-4 for the Brewers now. They win. Was it now 5 out of 7? They're 5-2 in their divisional games after losing 2 out of 3 against a very good Twins team. So I mean, everybody needs to remember that.
That's Hader's first save. That's right. He's got a couple wins, not saves.
That's right. Anyways. Jackie Bradley Jr.
More importantly, John, I'm going to shut the TV off now so I can pay more attention. Sorry, that's terrible watching Brewers. It was like Brewers Pirates. I could have done it, but Brewers Cubs was, you know, it's I got to watch that. Fly the L, John. Fly that L.
Biggest thing so far from the season that I wanted to take away is, I mean, like, Yelich is looking good, though he doesn't have his power right now. But the biggest things I want to say are, you know, Travis Shaw is man, he is the mayor of Ding Dong City. He's there and he's doing it. Where is he at now? I think he's got 10 RBI, 2 home runs. Omar Narvaez also 2 home runs and somehow only 5 RBI. 2 of them are himself. But yeah, no.
Well, and then after last year too, where the catcher position was just a void, like
especially after Pena got hurt, yeah.
Yeah, it was just an empty spot in the lineup. It was, you had 1 through 7, and then 8 and 9 were voids.
So, I mean, like right now, our batting for our catchers, Pena is, he's 3 of 10, and Narvaez is 10 of 22. So that's 13 out of 32, 13 hits and 32 at bats, 3 home runs, and 8 RBI. From the catcher spot, because Manny Pena's batting .300 with a home run.
Mm-hmm. No, they're both playing really well.
They're doing great.
Yeah, no, it's been a good start to the season. And like I said, that leading off against the Twins wasn't going to be easy. I mean, especially as well as they hit. So, and yeah, getting back into it, and the bats weren't really working either. So I'm happy to see it. The only thing I'm a little let down by is how easily the Brewers let Arcia go.
Yeah.
And for two, you know, nondescript, you know, like it'd be different if it was like it's kind of two nondescript pitchers, you know, like, you know, projects. Yeah. And then now, especially with Colton Wong going down, and, you know, Arcia potentially could play every position on the field. Maybe he can't pitch, but you could probably put him in center field and he'd figure it out.
Yeah, the thing that gets me, he definitely could. He's still got the arm. Urias, I like what he brings to the team, but it seemed like a really weird time to be trading. They're like, man, Arcia, and the amount
It's not like Arcia's makes a ton of money either. What? And it's not like they traded him. I mean, Arcia, you can plug into the lineup at third base, shortstop, second. You could probably pull off first base if you had to, and you could probably put him in right field if you really needed to. Could probably catch if you asked him to. You know, not very well, but probably could. he's never going to be a big time hitter. He's always going to be a 230, 240 hitter. But I mean, he is a starting caliber fielder. Like not a liability in the field. He's never been a liability in the field. No, that's great. What he's good at is fielding. And you just, and it's like, well, we got Shaw and we got Wong and we got Urias and we got Kestaddy at first. We don't need him anymore. Well, it's nice to have that one piece that's not costing you a whole ton of money, who's very reliable and has a flair for the dramatics in the playoffs, mind you, too.
Yeah, he's got a little pop when he needs it. The thing that does, I think he's coming up here on actually needing to get a contract, where Urias is more team control. So it's going to come out to, you know, just a control issue. They don't want to have to worry about paying him next year. They'd rather get some guys who can play next year, maybe. But they got a 26 and a 27-year-old.
They literally traded him for people who are no better than just available talent.
No, I know. I wish they
free agency. They could assign the same thing in the offseason for next to nothing. I mean, they didn't gain anything by it.
No,
the one guy's got a little bit of potential upside. I don't even remember his name. I remember reading the article. It's like, this guy could turn out to be a, you know, B to B plus middle reliever. And it's like, okay, so we just got lots of a very reliable infielder.
Yeah,
who doesn't hit real hot for a run-of-the-mill pitcher. potentially a run-of-the-mill pitcher, and another guy who's been a lifetime minor leaguer.
And it was immediately painful because we had
Wong
to...
Wong got hurt the next day.
Yeah, Wong gets hurt. And he hasn't been great. He's batting 105 right now, but it's going to come around for him. And his glove is well worth it. But man, if you have that, you could just say, like, well, let's just put Urias at second and keep Arcia short. And we've still got essentially two gold glove caliber fielders up the middle on our infield. Yeah. And,
like at the end of the game tonight when they end up shifting everybody around because of pinch hitting. And when you get to the end of the game and you're shifting around pitchers and stuff like that, you know, Shaw ended up at first base at the end of the game. That's where he was at the end. So, you know, you're going to end up with that in the National League too. Like, what happens if a pitcher has a bad game and you have to rotate him out early? And what the heck, we'll just, you know, switch out the pitcher for a position player and do a double switch. You know, there's weird things that happen. Arcia has good speed. I think they let him go way too early for way too little. And especially with a farm system that's just depleted, you didn't help out your farm system, and now your depth—you have less depth for position players.
Yeah, we were talking about like Jace Peterson or Daniel Robertson coming in playing second. I'm trying to think who was there the other day. Was it Robertson out there the other day? Mm-hmm. And now today they just put Gaston Hira back out there at second.
Yeah,
Strongman.
What do you gain by putting Robertson at second base? A slightly better bat, but a liability in the field?
Yeah.
Definitely by putting here at second base, that's a liability in the field.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's true.
That's the one thing Arcia.
But then you get to have strong mat on the field.
Arcia's got four out of the five tools. The problem is he can't hit.
Well, by can't hit, you mean
that was comedy gold right there.
Other than hitting,
he's got power, he's got speed, he can field. He just can't hit.
He batted 250 last year and led the team, which is the saddest part of that stat.
I mean, and yeah,
he's a guy who can hang around the Mendoza line, and he can just be, he can be a guy on that team. But he's a great fielder, and you should have been able to get something. I don't know. I don't mind them trading him. It's the what they got.
Yeah. Now, if you would have gotten not Hader, because you're not going to get Hader for him. But I mean, if you get somebody who is a solid middle reliever, that is a good option to bring in that will give you an inning or two shut down and can pitch every other day.
Or even if you got a guy who you said, like, here's a decent middle reliever and a young infielder who's going to take a year or two in the minors and maybe come up, then you say, like, okay, that's fine, but we got a 26 and a 27-year-old. They're going to be coming up, like, now, or who knows if they're ever going to be anything. Like, they're kind of, they got to get off the pot, you know?
You traded him for the next Dan Plesac?
That would be great. Right ahead. I would do that, yeah.
Oh my God,
love Danny Plesac. I've got his starting lineup figure in the other room just now.
I'm so happy he's on the radio. He's so smart too. He's such a good. He's got good takes too for a lefty.
He's been great for a lefty. That's fantastic. I don't know what that's supposed to even mean.
I don't even know what that means.
A great drop that was. Oh man, yeah. So, like we said, Brewers get the win against Chicago here, and now they've got. This is just a weird calendar the way they got this set up on the screen I'm looking at here.
Yeah, it's like when you go on Google, when you just quick Google Brewers, if you're using your phone, and it's like, oh, you're going to start me in the spring training games. Thanks, that helps.
Well, they start you here. Like I'm looking at ESPN's. And it's just so weird because they automatically take you to, I guess, July 16th. They're like, oh, you want to look at the second half, right? It's like, why would I want to do that? Two more against the Cubs. Then they get to have Pittsburgh. And then they'll have to play the Padres. The nice thing is they'll get right back to the top of the pitching order by the time they get to the Padres. Peralta gets the win today, so that gets them all the way through their starting lineup again. They'll get Woodruff and Burns for the last two games of the Chicago series. They will play the Pittsburgh AAA affiliate Pirates coming up with Hauser, Anderson, and Peralta. Anderson had a rough first game that came back really well the second game, and Peralta has looked very good so far.
Oh, hey, John.
Yeah.
Hey, I just hopped on here. Adam McKelvey. Perdomo did come into the game to pitch the ninth inning and was dismissed by the umpires.
Did we get a word on why?
I think it was because he wasn't on the lineup card.
Oh.
For available pitchers tonight.
Okay.
Yep, left him off the card. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, then you can't do anything about it.
So that's the reason why Rasmussen, is that who I said it was?
Yep, it was Rasmussen was in there.
Rasmussen, and then yeah.
That's, brought in Hader for the close.
Maybe that's why Rasmussen didn't do so hot either, because he was just out there slinging balls until someone else got warmed up.
Then, thus far, fairly happy with Hauser. Hauser's 1-1 right now, but he's looked pretty good out there. He's a guy who last year looked very much not quite ready. He was sitting in that kind of that five spot, pitching some in those games. And he wasn't up there in that starting rotation the whole time, but he was up there, showed some things, looked like he clearly wasn't ready last year. He's the third pitcher on this team this year, and he has looked fairly good. His stuff is good. I don't think the loss particularly is that bad for him, because that was that. Yeah, he gets the loss. They got rocked around in that one. It was the 8-2 Minnesota game, but still. His stuff has looked all right. He came back, had a nice game, beat St. Louis in that 9-5, and I feel pretty good about him at 3. I love having Peralta at 5 because I think he's a fantastic 5. I think our one is our one's in 2.
Got the win tonight too.
Peralta got the win. Yeah.
Peralta should be. Peralta should be your number 5 pitcher, not your number 2 pitcher like he's been in the past.
Right. And Woodruff and Burns, I mean, just as a 1-2.
Sound like a good law firm.
Yeah, right. That's probably the best 1-2 in the Central for sure.
Oh, definitely in the Central,
And maybe in the entire National League. And I think Peralta as the 5, I mean, Hauser and Anderson at 3 and 4 aren't the greatest set, but there's no drop off.
Mm-hmm.
Like Hauser's nowhere near Burns, but Anderson's not that far off in Hauser, and Peralta as your 5th pitcher is better than most other teams' 4th.
Well, it's still better. It's still a better starting pitching situation than we've had in just the last 5 years. Which
it's fantastic.
This is
a World Series pitching lineup.
Yeah, it's okay. The first two especially, there I'd like to see the number 3 be a little bit more stout.
Well, once you get to the playoffs too, you're going to put Peralta in that middle relief.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, that too. Once and if you get to the playoffs, but like I'm just saying, like as of right now, like through regular season, I'd like to see that number 3 spot be a little bit more stout.
Yeah,
but it's good. I mean, it's can't be choosers. Yeah. I mean, we have the best 1-2 pitching combination we've had since. Who came behind CC Sabathia?
Oh, it was Greinke. Sabathia
and Greinke. And then, that was amazing, by the way. That's 2 Hall of Fame pitchers right there. But anyhow, yeah. it was a good six months, three months, whatever it was. Remember that time CC Sabathia pitched every game? Anyways, you think back to like Sheets. You know, remember when Sheets was out there slinging the ball? Maybe one of the best pitchers in the league.
Yeah, him and Capilano was a decent 1-2.
No run support. basically the only one out there. I forgot he was with Capilano. But I mean, besides that, the next time you have to go back to get a good 1-2 would be like Chris Bosio and Cal Eldred back to back. That was what, 92?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
When they both won 15 games, I can't think of the last time we had 2 good pitchers like that back to back right off, you know, for a whole season. Like you said, what was Sabathia with Greinke?
I think they were there for that one, you know, just that little bit at the end because Greinke was with them for a couple years. Yeah, I think they were both at that same.
Did they overlap?
What's that?
I'm not sure if they overlapped. Did they?
I thought they did. Maybe I'm getting that wrong, and I'm sure we'll get angry Twitter.
And with JJ Hardy and that bit.
Yeah, think of this team though, like Teddy Higuera, Don August, Chris Bosio, Jamie Navarro.
No, that's not bad. Jamie Navarro.
That was 89 though.
Yeah. Well, that was Navarro was underrated good pitcher.
Yeah. And that was when Teddy was a little older, so he was 9-6 at that point, but still, mm-hmm. Bosio had 15 wins that year. But that's still a good group of pitching.
Bosio and Eldred, I think, in 92 both had 15 wins.
Was that Eldred's rookie year, right?
Yeah, he was the number two. That was the year they should have made the playoffs, but Toronto snapped it out of the. That was the last year of the That was like the last year or the second to last year of no wild card, and it was the last year that I think Mahler played for the Brewers because I think he left for Toronto right after that.
Yeah, and then I believe that was if that's that same year that was Pat Listash was the rookie of the year.
Yeah, rookie of the year. Yep,
guys right in front, like Eldred and Listash were both right there for rookie of the year, and Listash just barely beat him out.
And neither of them did anything with their career, by the way.
Eldred was nice for a long time. He was a very nice pitcher, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel good about this team going forward. Like, we're going to have, like I said, you got two more with the Cubs, and then you get to go play Pittsburgh at home for a couple. We'll still stay at home, I guess, with Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Pete Owen's going to be super happy with all those old name drops right there, by the way.
San Diego, Chicago, Cubs, and then Miami, which is nice, and then you get to play four with the Dodgers at home, and we'll see how that works out.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting.
I did like that. So there was the game tonight was on FS1, which is good for me because I'm subject to blackouts down here for Brewers games. So I listen to a lot of Brewers games because I'm kind of in the five county area, but I'm not. And I don't know why, but like every time I turn on the Brewers game, this game has been blacked out, and I'm like, I'm not even in the five county area. Like that's the next county over.
Yeah.
So I don't get to see a lot of games, but tonight it was the national announcers because it was on FS1. And they mentioned that when Travis Shaw came up to bat about Justin Turner, how the Brewers tried to get Justin Turner during the offseason. That was the plan for third base. And so and they didn't mock it either. They actually made it sound like the Brewers actually had a real chance of getting Justin Turner. And
I wouldn't know why they wouldn't. Yeah.
They offered him enough money. They offered him the same amount of money. I mean, it's just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. We'll transition.
It was like when CC left the Brewers after that half a season, the Brewers did offer him almost as much as the New York Yankees. It's just that if CC would have signed with the Brewers, they couldn't have. It would have been him and eight other minor leaguers on the field every night.
It would have been a rough go of it. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of rough go for it, we'll take the transition now where we can. We did just have the Bucks going through a very good roll of things here, but playing through some injuries and having a couple rough spats here, we had a couple games where the Bucks are playing without Giannis and
anybody else for that.
Yeah, there were several where they played with nobody else. Yeah.
They didn't play with that one night. They didn't have him, Drew, Chris Middleton, or DiVincenzo.
Yes. So they had,
four of their five starters.
So here, like the starting lineup against the Hornets. This is a home game for the Bucks, but against the Hornets, they lose 119-127. So they still put up 119 in this game with Thanasis Antetokounmpo, Nuara, Portis, Teague, and Forbes as your starting five.
Days.
That is not a single one of your actual starters.
Yeah. By the way, good pickup on Teague. I like Teague.
I do like Teague, especially after trading away DJ Augustine. I think that was nice to get him in there. Bucks also had a rough loss against the Mavericks.
It's pretty much one for one with him and DJ Augustine. I'll name
a little bit, but
Augustine's quite a bit younger though, right?
I think he is. I mean, I don't think it's that big a thing. His handle is so good, and he had the ability to really just make so many things happen. I loved seeing it. When he played, he looked really good for us. I think Teague's going to be able to do a lot of the same things. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's still coming off the bench. Either way, it's either one of them is depth.
Yeah, Teague's got that playoff experience too. And that lineup against the Hornets too, it's not like they didn't show up, but yeah, I mean, it's...
Well, yeah, I love this one though. Like they got
Nora, the other Antetokounmpo, Portis, Teague, and Forbes.
Yeah,
that's basically what the Timberwolves roll out every night.
Yeah. Without Giannis again, they're starting Portis. So they're starting two centers. So they got Portis and Lopez in the starting five in the game against the Mavericks.
Yeah,
lose 101-116. Yeah, I mean, Drew Holiday's in there. Middleton's in there. That's one that you feel like you should have had a better shot at. Yeah. Just nothing much from the bench.
Well, the game against the Warriors, too. I actually caught the end of that game. That was insane. Steph Curry and the Warriors were just... I think the Bucks had a... The Bucks had a pretty big lead. The Bucks got outscored 36-17 in the fourth quarter against... Oh, that's the Mavericks.
So 39-36 in the fourth. I mean... The Bucks outscored them 38-30, had a lead against the Warriors,
yeah,
and then got outscored 39-33.
Did you see the end of that? Did you see the end of that game?
I didn't catch the end of it, but I mean, like, I can see where
Curry
was. Going.
Curry was drilling like 50-foot three pointers. It was like off the dribble. Yeah, it was stupid. It was just unbelievable. Well,
he's got 41. They get the 28th. Let's see, they're 34 points off the bench.
Right.
So I mean, like. Yeah, 38 points off, or yeah, 34 points off the bench, pardon me, and you get 41 from Curry. Yeah, what are you going to do? Wiseman comes up with 13. Kelly Oubre, 19 points. Wiggins gets him just 9, and, you know, Green didn't kick anybody in the
manhood. Well, down the stretch, too, Wiggins had a stupid 3, too, like off his back foot, like... falling out of bounds drilled one. Even
this is the one where if Giannis plays, we definitely win this by more, because they got 10 points from Thanasis and 15 points from Teague. They had double digits from the bench from two different players. That is almost 100% a Bucks win in any normal situation. But yeah, I mean, Lopez gets 9 as a starter and DiVincenzo gets 6, and that hurts your odds there, and they lose by 1. The best part of this week still was the Bucks they're starting Connaughton, DiVincenzo, Holiday, Middleton, and Lopez. And they just destroyed the Magic in Orlando in just a ridiculous game. If nobody's seen this, like, it is 124-87. It's just an unbelievably mismatched game. And Orlando's going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, they are. Like
they're going to make the playoffs.
Are they?
Playoffs. I'm pretty. Let's see where they are right now. So they're sitting at.
Oh no, Orlando's 17.
Oh no, I'm sorry. They're down there further. They were higher, I thought, before. No, I'm entirely wrong on that. That's a way worse team than I imagine. I'm sorry. They were up a little further.
It's like, hold on a second. I know the East is bad, but come on, man.
Ah, they're only 10.5 back of the Knicks. Yeah. All right.
No,
all
and
right.
The thing is, too, it's like you look at that game against what was the game where they we were just talking about where they were starting nobody?
Just the Charlotte game. Just
the Charlotte game.
And that's a 16 team.
If you look at that box score looks better than the game against Orlando. Like, the starters had 21, 11, 9, 12, and 9.
Yeah, and
they scored 124 points in that game.
Yeah, and that's another one where it's like a statistical anomaly, basically because we don't have Giannis in there, but double digits from Diakite, or is that right? I always forget his name.
I was going to say Diatake, but
I always forget how to say his name. I don't watch him that much.
Yeah,
and Merrill. Merrill gets 13 points in that game, but so we got double digits there, but, you know, Topane and Connaughton account for 13 more points, and that's it. So, yeah, I don't know. These are ones they really could have won, and I'll be very, very honest on my take on the Bucks at this point. And I think I've said something approaching this for a couple weeks now. I don't care about the rest of this regular season. Let's get me to the playoffs. Like, they're not missing the playoffs.
Well, you said exactly what I thought you were going to say, but you finished the sentence differently. I thought you were just going to stop at I don't care.
just like
Marquette sports.
Oh, painful.
Oh,
For somebody, I'm sure. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know either.
They're 4.5 up.
People that go to Marquette make way too much money to listen to podcasts.
I'll say that they are 6 games up on the Knicks. Where are they? 5.5 up? No. So I figured.
My God, seeing the Knicks and 3-2-1. you don't have to leave that one, but no. But I was half saying that the Nets and the Knicks in the same sentence, they're trying to what's that called when you put an apostrophe and you put two words together?
Contraction.
Making a contraction between the Nets and the Knicks. There, it's odd to see the Nets and the Knicks both. If the playoffs started today, they would both be in the playoffs.
I mean,
how many times has that happened ever? Because at least one of the two teams has sucked at some point.
Well, the big thing for the Bucks, especially going down the rest of the way, is their division is hot garbage. I mean, Detroit and Cleveland, Chicago, none of the rest of the division is going to make this playoffs, it looks like.
No.
Indiana is the closest. They're a couple games back of New York, but they're kind of hanging there. I don't know that they move up that much anymore. The Bucks are 7.5 clear. All right, like they're 7.5 clear of Indiana, who is the 9th seed in the East, and also the next team in the division.
I mean, even not even going by conferences or not going by divisions, but conferences, they're 5.5 up on the Hawks already, and the Hawks are the 4th in the conference.
Yeah,
I mean I'll just put it this way. Unless, I'm not going to count out the Heat because the Heat do have that thing. That thing that they do. Yep. And Jimmy Butler can, when he decides to turn it on, be the best player in the entire league. The problem is he's inconsistent. But it's going to be the 76ers, Nets, or Bucks in the finals this year.
There's 19 games left. The Bucks are 7.5 clear of the last place team. Yeah. Or the ninth place team, I mean. 7.5 clear of ninth place with 19 left. So it's like, yeah. I mean, they're making the playoffs. It's just a matter of where they're going to be and seeing if they can get ready. And let's finally see if Bude can be an actual playoff coach. Because
Since being that Nick Nurse is not doing so hot this year, he'll probably be better off. Because Nick Nurse is the kryptonite to Bude.
That's his dad.
Yeah.
It's just nothing he can do about that.
Sorry, daddy.
Yeah. No, he has not been a particularly good playoff coach. Every time that he's had a loss in the playoffs in these last 2 years, it's a team they were favored to beat and that they beat in the regular season, and it doesn't matter. If we can get to the saddest part of any part of our NBA coverage here this week, and I mean it's been a bad week for the Bucks, but I'm not down on it because it's a weird little streak.
Oh, it was a West Coast stretch too. I mean, it was West Coast stretch. I mean, it's just like any team that goes to the West Coast, especially in basketball, since there's the Western Conference better too. I mean,
and the injuries and stuff without Giannis out there, and
I'm not worried about it. It happens. Yeah.
So. I mean, they got Minnesota, Atlanta, Memphis next. I'm not particularly worried about that set. It's going to be the ones coming up.
Atlanta's a good team. I mean,
decent. Not as scary. The ones you got to worry about more is like we're going to get Phoenix, Philadelphia starting basically at our next podcast.
Yeah.
So they won't be talked about much in our next podcast, but it'll be that week after. Next week, I think we'll be fine. This coming week here that we were listening to, it's going to be okay. It's just, this set 2 weeks out is going to be the part that's going to be more interesting to watch in terms of getting themselves mentally ready for what's coming up. There's only 19 games left, like we said. These are the ones where you just start tuning yourself to what's coming because you are a playoff team. There's just about nothing that's going to keep you out of that.
So why isn't the Timberwolves been around since like 1988 and the Grizzlies, which used to be the Vancouver Grizzlies?
Yeah.
They haven't done anything either, but they're more recently in the league. Yeah. Why are they consistently better than the Timberwolves?
I don't know.
The Timberwolves have been just a garbage fire for 30-plus years.
And that's what I want to get to is with Minnesota coming up next, the weird news coming out this week that apparently A-Rod is finalizing a deal to buy the Timberwolves. And have you been following this? It seems like it's right in your wheelhouse there, Aaron.
Oh no, I listen to the Power Trip. This is it's not unknown to listeners of this podcast that I do foray and listen to the KFan shows out of the Twin Cities. So no, I'm very well aware. And, so that came out over the weekend.
Yeah, and he's planning to move them to Seattle.
Yep. Well, if there's a team, to move, it's the Timberwolves.
That it's still sad to me. Like Minnesota, I don't know. Like they're not a terrible basketball town compared to some of these other places. I just
that's where the Lakers came from.
Yeah, they lost one team already, and it was the Lakers. I mean, that's why they're called the Lakers.
They lost the North Stars too.
Well, I mean, in basketball, yeah, they've lost other things. Yeah, losing the North Stars hurt way more. But I mean, like
way more.
The Lakers. Gosh, I mean,
if they lose the Timberwolves, nobody's gonna care. Nobody cares in that town. Like they, honest to God. So they opened up the Target Center to 3,000 fans with COVID restrictions last week. They didn't get 3,000 people to show up. I mean, when Kevin Garnett was in town and the Timberwolves were still a fairly new franchise. I mean, the one thing the Timberwolves will always have is the highest regular season attendance for a season ever. And that's because they played their first season in the Metrodome, I think. Because they put a court down on the field and they had just a ridiculous amount of attendance. But I mean, the Timberwolves have been, they are the losingest franchise in North American history by percentage. Like it's not even close. Nobody shows up to their games. Nobody wants to go to their games. Minnesota is a hockey or Minneapolis is a hockey town. Nobody cares. Like it's just,
yeah, it's hockey and baseball are the things that sell. Like yeah, Twins will always sell.
Hockey, baseball, and football. It's a football town. I mean, they love their Vikings.
They like their Vikings when they're winning. They will
But the Timberwolves are garbage. I mean,
yeah, that's the thing.
You know, they've been talking about it for a couple of years now. Like, if they leave, nobody cares. And who's going to get them? Las Vegas or Seattle?
Yeah. So, and that's the thing is like, yeah. I mean, the Twins will continue to sell, and even when the Twins are losing, you'll see Twins players on bulletin board, like billboards and stuff, selling things.
Right, they're the last male sports team to win a championship.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a great cachet of baseball. I mean, that's mm-hmm. one thing. So they've always loved the Twins. And that's the thing you can always tell. Like when you go into a town, you can really tell what they like by like who is selling things in that town. And mm-hmm. the answer is it's being sold by the Twins or by players in the Wild to a lesser extent. Mm-hmm. Less of them are, I mean, like they're more well known in town, but they don't sell as well as Twin stuff in terms mm-hmm. of personalities and such. The Vikings aren't almost on any kind of advertising. Like you could live there and not know that there's a team in town for the most part because they don't show up on anything unless you're looking for sports talk radio.
Right.
They aren't part of the inherent culture of the city necessarily. I mean, like, and I've lived there for years. I lived in the Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. It's weird to go from someplace like, you know, like Chicago or Green Bay and then go into Minneapolis and be like, there's an NFL team in this town and nobody's using that to sell anything because the Bears players are everywhere. That Bears logo is everywhere selling stuff because it's
still on billboards. Right? When you're driving down the interstate.
It's sells stuff and it doesn't do that in the Twin Cities.
That guy uses Gillette blades.
Yeah. That's I don't know. It's a weird little, I mean, I guess now it's right by where the Twins play, but it wasn't before. It's just kind of a weird, I don't know. It's not a great spot. And I'll be honest, anything down actually in town, there's not parking. It's hard to get around down there. I could understand not wanting to be anywhere near that area, but you know, the Twins found a little spot where they could shoehorn their stadium in among mm-hmm. a couple parking ramps near a highway.
Well, I wouldn't want to be in the Twin Cities right now anyways, but that's a different subject together.
Else entirely. But yeah, it is sad to see a team like that leave just regardless.
They don't care. They don't care about basketball. Get a basketball team back in Seattle where they actually care about basketball.
That's true. And then take their hockey team away and move it to Milwaukee because they don't care about hockey like we do in Wisconsin. They don't in Seattle. They just don't. And then we could name it something cool. Anything like cool. No, the Kraken's a stupid name.
You're stupid.
Yeah.
I love the Kraken.
It's a
great name. It's a great name. It's unique. It's different. What else should they be?
Just be like the Canadians and call them some weird euphemism for Americans, like you know, like the Yankees are in baseball.
Yeah,
like the Canadian teams are Maple Leafs and Canadians and Canucks.
I was going to say, what do you like on the Seattle Sounders? Oh, that's
no, that's dumb. Wait,
that's
Chinooks. They should have gone with Seattle Chinooks because that's a great name for a team like that. And it has something to do locally, whereas Kraken's not a thing.
It's an octopus, John.
It's not actually, no.
No, it's not.
No, it's not a thing. It's a mythological creature that may or may not look anything like an octopus or a squid. When I watched the movie...
John, what's a charger?
It's a charger. It's about electricity.
Okay.
Yeah.
So not a real thing.
Well, electricity's real, yeah.
But a charger's not a real thing.
What do you use on your phone? Come on, dingbat. Knock this off. I mean, like, that's the thing. Don't use a charger. Don't ever use a charger, Aaron.
Your phone did not exist in the 1960s when the chargers got their name.
The superchargers. Okay, San Diego.
Okay, John, superchargers. John, how about the Titans?
Well, the Titans are a mythological thing, of course, but I mean, like, you know what that looks like. They're giant people.
Oh, the Titans are mythological. Okay.
Yeah. I'm not saying that was a great name. Oilers was way better. They should have kept Oilers, so it makes no sense.
What are the Reds?
The Reds, because they wear red. It's baseball.
Oh, that's true. I'm trying to go through. I'm trying to come up. Oh, what about the Wild? I mean, that's an adjective.
Yeah, that one's kind of interesting because it's like an adjective and a noun and kind of just a descriptive. It's more interesting than the Kraken. I was like, that's just weird.
We do need a hockey team, though. You're right.
We should have one more in Seattle.
And if they're worried about it affecting the Chicago market, then they should put it halfway between Milwaukee and Madison.
Just put it in Whitewater.
Not even Whitewater, but somewhere like Johnson's Creek, right on the 94.
I was just waiting for you to try to make it a Janesville thing. It'd be great.
No, the Proctor Bee Pigeons.
we were looking at that. I was like, that's what they should name the Seattle hockey team is.
We here in Proctor, we're looking at getting a minor league baseball team, a juniors hockey team, or an NFL franchise.
Just one of them. I mean, whatever works.
Just open that spectrum.
You want to know one of the greatest things about Target Center is I looked it up on Google, and what it says is it's a music venue.
Right, no, and that's why I wasn't even sure what you were going to say, but I was going to answer with, yeah, but it's a great place to watch a concert. I'll tell you that much. So
I never saw one at Target. The ones I went to were at Excel Center, because Excel Center is better.
Excel is a beautiful arena. Like, it's Excel
great
kicks ass. It really does. It kicks a lot of butt. I'll tell you what though. If the Timberwolves get out of town, they better get a sheet ice over there to Target Center though too, so they can play in both venues.
Yeah, and
it's because Target Center is a great hockey arena too. Well, Target Center is a good place anyways, no matter what. So
yeah, the Xcel Energy Center is in such a good spot.
It is. It's in a great spot. It's made for hockey too.
It is the best situated stadium in the entire Twin Cities area. It's right by the Capitol. It's surrounded by beautiful things and nice little restaurants. And you could tell they really took a lot of time figuring out where to put that and how to build it up.
Yeah.
And it is the thing that things are built around down there. I mean, it's obviously not, because there's what's that old mansion up there by the cathedral, and there's obviously the state capitol. Yeah. But I mean, it looks great. And
St. Paul is the better of the two downtowns, by the way.
It is.
It is. I mean, if you're going to go hang out somewhere, St. Paul's much. Yeah,
it's a nice
Minneapolis. Minneapolis feel. Minneapolis has a very.
It's terrible parking.
It's a very empty feel. Nobody lives there. Like, it feels like nobody.
It's just a weird feeling place. Yeah, it's a little different. It's a little more open. There's a lot more small housing in St. Paul, it feels like, when I drive through. The roads are weird as okay.
There's some neighborhoods in downtown St. Paul where Minneapolis is just buildings.
Yeah, and like, I was going to say, the University of St. Thomas is right in St. Paul, down by the river, and it's, down by the river, and it's...
Well, Hamlin's in St. Paul too, right?
Yes, further over, though, not quite as... Closer to the state fairgrounds.
It's not quite as nice. East St. Paul, but that's where Tommy went to school, and I just remember, I was amazed by how close that was to downtown St. Paul, too.
And the Perkins I always used to go to.
Yeah.
It was nice.
I mean, it's a little bit longer of an Uber ride, but I mean, yeah.
I used to run to the river from campus at St. Thomas and then just run along the river. There's a nice, well-lit area there. So I would go after evening prayer and run around.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
People, we don't have anything to talk about. We got baseball. We got
are we gonna get into the Frozen Four and how Minnesota had three teams? Are we can just talk more about the Patriots and Minnesota today.
Yeah, let's just wrap this up with
Had three teams in the Frozen Four and couldn't get it done.
Yeah, let's just put that in the end here. We're gonna wrap it all up. Just take our last little shots here and do everything we can in what we lovingly call our last call. All right, Aaron, let's get right down into it then. Let's talk about the Frozen Four.
I don't know what happened. I know the scores. I know you. I'm very aware of what happened to UMD because UMD lost to UMass 3-2 in overtime.
Yeah.
And apparently UMass got away with some major non-calls. Aww. And me and you know that. I mean, I think, did we mention it last week? We might have been talking about it after the show, but like UMD is the creme de la creme of college hockey, and if they didn't beat UMass, UMD was the favorite to win.
They were the best. At the beginning of the tournament, I believe North Dakota was the favorite to win.
The favorite overall, but I mean,
Scott of the Frozen Four, yeah.
Scott Sandlin was going for a three-peat. Like, he's got a team that expects to win national championships. He's got guys that have been, you know, that's all they know is we make it to the Frozen Four, we win. And then, of course, Mankato and St. Cloud State, and then there was UMass. And, I mean, none of these teams are bad. But, once UMD lost and Mankato and St. Cloud going up against each other, that's an in-state rivalry.
That was a rough one, too.
Once UMD was out, I was like, good luck, St. Cloud, but I don't think it's going to happen. And it really didn't happen. St. Cloud got blanked 5-0 in the final.
Once UMD went out, I mean, like, that was Minnesota State's best chance at getting a title in quite just forever. I mean, like, they have not had that kind of power. They were a, like, D3 OK team, and then became a D2 power for the couple years where there was a Division II, which, by the way,
people don't know this about college hockey. They don't really have a Division II. They have a Division III and a Division I.
There is no D2. There were, at small periods of time, one of the best D2 things. To let you know how many teams just would not play D2 and why it couldn't keep up, one of the D2 powerhouses, you know, Minnesota State Mankato, was a great power of D2. Like, the second best was Alabama Huntsville.
Yeah, so
they've got like three different national championships in Division II. Mm-hmm. It's like nope.
Well, I remember when I used to work when I went to school at UW Superior, I worked at the radio station, and I did board ops back at the station during hockey games, so I got to listen to the great velvet pipes of one John Munson calling games up at UW Superior. Hence, I didn't get to see a lot of games, but I knew exactly what was going on because John would call the games. He was our station manager. He's Northwest coordinator of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we were a public radio station that also carried games because we were a college station. But, I used to have to go on to USCHO, and this is the early 2000s. So this is when USCHO was still really young. It was a new thing, and like getting those, you know, trying to get those, and I still had to call like other stadiums. Like, we had hotlines to other stadiums, and so I'd have the schedule and I'd have to call what's the arena in St. Stevens Point,
KB Willett.
I'd have to call Willett because they were playing, UW Stevens Point was playing a home game, and I'd have to call and get the score of the game and talk it to John over the break. And USHO. And I just remember D2 because there was D1 had a very robust section. And this is 2001, 2002, right? So D1 had a very robust section. D3 had a very robust section. And then there was like eight teams in D2 for the entire country.
Yeah, it's pretty sad type of little thing they had there. And I was texting Aaron some of these things, but like, you know, there are five different schools in Michigan have won a Division I national championship. There are 19 total, including Michigan, who has the most of any Division I men's team. Massachusetts now has 12 titles in that state And that's there's one of them. Well, it's most of them are there's like five each for BU and BC.
Yeah.
And then now UMass got its first one, and Harvard has one with the guy who used to Baldoroni, the guy who used to be the head coach for UWSP, ended up coaching there for a couple years, and got a national championship, I believe, while he was out there.
Do they give him an honorary Harvard degree?
I don't think so. Colorado, Denver, and like the Colorado contract. College have two different schools that have combined for 10 titles. All of the Minnesota schools, only two of them have won national titles. That's UMD and Minnesota. They have eight combined. Wisconsin has six.
UMD has three of them in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
U of M has zero in the last 10 years. Because you got to remember, what was it, 2008? UMD won their first... 2008, was it?
I don't remember what year it was, yeah.
Yeah, they won their first national championship, and then they won the last two. So, like, they've won three in the last 10-ish years. U of M hasn't even sniffed the national championship game in
And that's, of course, UW by itself has six national championships. In D3, the state of Wisconsin has 15 titles. Mm-hmm. And that's Stevens Point second, right behind Middlebury, has the most. UWSP, Superior has one. River Falls is like two, whatever that is. Minnesota has one D3 state championship, and that was Bemidji back in the day. That's just a reminder, everybody, that hockey just matters more in Michigan, Massachusetts, and Wisconsin than it does in Minnesota.
Right.
I'm just going against what you said last week.
I know. I was going to say Superior decided to win their national championship when I was in Nicaragua, too. So I didn't even get to see it.
That's right.
Anyways, but yeah, no. So
and we're
so
better at women's hockey.
So Michigan. Okay, so help me out here. So Michigan, obviously, Michigan has how many titles did you say Michigan had?
The state has 19.
No, just Michigan. Like
I think Wolverines. They've got 10.
They've got 10. So who are the other schools then?
Michigan State has a couple. Michigan, and then Lake Superior State has one. Northern Michigan has one. And Michigan Tech has a couple.
Michigan Tech. Okay, I was going to say the UP teams then.
Yeah. Michigan Tech and NMU, the UP schools, because, yeah, they...
Well, Lake Superior is technically a UP.
Oh, yeah, Lake Superior is in Sault
Ste. Marie, Michigan side, not Canada side.
Yeah, the Sioux.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Good for Michigan Tech. Good engineering school.
The Huskies.
Yes.
I know some people who graduated there. It is a good engineering screen, like you say. I don't really have a whole lot else to add. The one thing I wanted to bring up, we talked about this, just Aaron and I, slightly before. My dad brought this to my attention. One of my new favorite baseball players ever is Rube Waddell.
God, Rube Waddell.
This is some of the greatest stuff I've ever read. You just want to read about like his basic baseball career. There were times that he would leave games in the middle of games just because he wanted to go fishing.
Chase fire trucks.
Yeah, he would leave if he saw fire trucks. He was obsessed with fire trucks. He would leave the mound to go chase fire trucks. If fans in the stands had puppies or shiny objects, he would leave the field to go play with them. And gosh, he's just got so many of these great things. Like he kept getting traded over and over again because people loved how great he was at pitching and then got very tired of all of everything else.
He played for all sorts of amateur teams. He played for a whole bunch of, he played for the Racine and Kenosha teams and Twin Cities teams and the original Milwaukee Brewers that were not Major League Baseball, but
They were a Major League team.
Well, were they major
there, league team? There was one. I guess he may have played for the semi-pro team, but there was a Milwaukee Brewers at one point, too. Well, he played for Connie Mack. He pitched for Connie Mack.
Yeah, no, Connie Mack. He followed Connie Mack all over the place.
Yeah.
Because Connie Mack realized how talented he was, but he was a psychopath.
They came off a doubleheader, pitched the first game of a doubleheader for Milwaukee, winning in the 17th inning on his own triple. And then Connie Mack offers him a three-day fishing vacation if he would pitch the second game as well. So then he went in and pitched a complete game shutout and then went to Pewaukee Lake to fish for 3 days. Like, what in the world? What a great, great story. Like, this guy
Now, mind you, and you got to remember, too, this is all like, he ended up dying at age 37 in the 19-teens, right?
Yeah, it's not. So
the turn of the century stuff.
This guy, he had, it said he had a triple crown for pitching, 27-10, 287 strikeouts, and a 1.48 ERA in the same season in 1905.
And like second place for strikeouts was like 150.
Yeah,
like,
I believe he held
almost doubled second place's strikeout total.
Yeah, he was killing it. I mean, like, he was the Babe Ruth of strikeouts, basically. Like, his numbers were so far ahead of everybody, it's, you forget it by looking at today's numbers. You're like, man, nobody was doing that.
Right.
And
no,
he's kind of forgotten.
His baseball acumen is incredible. And much like the Babe, too, off field, well, Babe wasn't nuts like he was. If you read into him a little bit, he's certifiably nuts, but. Man, substance abuse issues up the yin yang. Yeah.
This is a movie that needs to be made.
It is. It really is. Like,
and the title just has to be Southpaw, because that was his nickname, because he was an alcoholic left-hander. But yeah.
It's second reference to left-handers tonight. And to grading. Not bad for a left-hander.
So interesting. Aaron, do you have anything else that you want to add before we wrap up the podcast?
I don't know, man.
It's been weird.
So we talked about Edelman. Did we talk about Brent Suter's windup?
No, we talked about pre-show.
Windup, it's just a glorified stretch.
Well, maybe you did. But I'm trying to remember if that was pre-show or during show. And just
he was pitching when we first started. I love his windup's the best. He is the goofiest looking. There's a reason why he works with not having heat. He is an unathletic left-handed pitcher who can somehow get those balls in there. And I couldn't imagine, like, the way he winds up like that. It's just, it's so jarring to watch. It's brilliant. I love it. It's very Dontrell Willis. So,
all right.
Boy, another random name drop.
Cool. Anyway, Dontrell Willis. Yeah. All right, everybody. Aaron and I are going to actually look at some stuff for next week to try to get ready for the draft, which will be approaching. It's the weirdest year for a draft because, like, all the numbers are fake. Just all of them are fake. It's the highest RAS scores we have ever seen. The number of 9.98s that I've already looked at are like, no. Just no. Several guys, the number of 4.3s is the highest it's ever been. Because everybody can lie. And they do. We'll take a look at that for next week.
Can we even get Andy Herman anymore these days? Or
we've talked to Andy Herman, obviously, before the draft. He's pretty wrapped up, but he wants to talk to us in a week or two after the draft. So we're still working to get him in so we can possibly evaluate the draft afterwards with Andy.
Sweet.
If we could have Andy and Paul on at the same time, that would be a phenomenal thing, which would be all, you know, scout based versus all metric based, and they could just yell at each other, and it would be just the worst show.
If you get them on, don't even include me, because I'll just ruin it. I'll be wasting precious time.
They just get mad at each other. It would be something interesting. But anyhow, thank you again for joining us this week. We found time to fill here with the little bit that we had, and it's been, you know, I love talking with Aaron. I love having everybody come out here with us. It's always just fun times to sit here and talk Wisconsin sports as much as we can. So
I feel bad I didn't have anything to say about WrestleMania last night.
me neither. Remember to follow the podcast at Scotty Johnny Pod. You can follow me at Not So Humble Host, and you can follow Aaron at Cheddar Talk. Remember, wherever it is that you listen to us, please download, subscribe, listen, rate, and review us. And wherever it is that you are listening, remember that whether you are on the town or on the go, it is always on Wisconsin.
If you smell la 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 la, what the rock is cooking.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening, and on Wisconsin.